y'all. I'm Diane Sismore, and we're here for Laugh Out Loud Writing Humor. I personally write romantic comedy, short stories, and novels, and psychological horror, which really puts a twist. You know, there's always a little horror in every romance. So I'm going to have each one of the panel introduce themselves and let them tell you what they write.
Hi, I'm Lori Robbins, and my book, Lesson Plan for Murder, won a silver badge last night for Best Cozy Mystery, so I'm pretty excited. And I do write funny. I was born in Brooklyn, I live in New Jersey, and I just think that's automatically funny. I just kind of course, in terms of writing murder mysteries, I just say, as a parent and a teacher, I really know what makes people want to kill other people, and I guess I kind of take inspiration from the writing.
Thank you for doing that.
Okay, I'm Lynn Hess, and I have a law enforcement background. My first novel was a crime novel, and standalone, and kind of gritty. And I, as is my personality, I'm also a performer, and so I decided to go the other way, and I wrote another kind of hero, which was one of the finalists for Cozy, and I had a lot of fun writing it, and I am from Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Hi, I'm Brenda Donlan. I write the University Mystery Series, set in a small college town in South Dakota. I don't know how not to have something funny, because I find humor in everything. I might start laughing here pretty soon. I find things funny. I find things funny, and I don't know how to not enjoy and take that kind of enjoyment out of life. So I guess it just kind of spills over into my books. That's it.
I'm Robert Downs, and I stole my program, so I'm just going to read my bio real quick from here. So Robert Downs aspired to be a writer before he realized how difficult the writing process was. Originally from West Virginia, he's lived in Virginia, Massachusetts, New Mexico, and now resides in California. And I'm moving to Colorado here in a couple months. When he's not writing, Robert can be found reading, watching movies, traveling, or smiling. And his seventh book, The Bridal Chase, came out in May with Black Couple Books, and he's under contract for six more books with Black Couple Books. So that's pretty much me, and I like to think I write humor in my novels. I laugh with some of the comments and everything, so I hope others do when they read them.
I'm Rhonda Gilliland. I write the Cook to Death series. Well, I edit it, actually, and sometimes throw in a story. My humor starts with a title. Cook to Death, Tales of Crime and Cookery. Cook to Death, Volume 2, Lying on a Plate. Cook to Death, Volume 3, Hell for the Holidays. And the one in the works is Cook to Death, Volume 4, Cold Cut Files. So the humor will start with the titles. They're tales of crime and cooking, and they have a recipe after each story, because I feel that you're ripped off if you're reading about food and do not have a recipe or something in your mind.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Christopher Grayson. I was going to do the...
Hello, everyone.
I'm going to do the Johnny Cash. I'm Johnny Cash. I write the Detective Jack Stratton series, and I wrote The Girl Who Lived.
The two winners are on the end, I believe.
Yeah, we bookmarked here. Okay, I'm going to start this off. Do you write humor during draft or sprinkle it during edits? Why don't you start, Lori?
Okay, I would say that in terms of the actual situation, that's part of the draft process. Mm-hmm. And it's probably in the editing process where I'm refining dialogue and things like that when you're getting it to a sharper point, it's at that point that I kind of check and I maybe see the humor in something that I didn't initially see. So I guess that's how I do it.
Mm-hmm. I personally start out with a humor situation, mm-hmm. and then sprinkle in the dialogue during the edits,
right.
because I may not necessarily be in that frame of mind to for the quirky side. Depends on what time of the day and what kind of day it's been. So, but that's me. How do you go about this?
Yeah, well, it started with a conflict as well as a kind of a quirky situation because two sisters are the main, part of the main characters, and they just don't get along. They love each other. They're going to back each other up no matter what, but one is always dragging the other one into somebody else's business, and they really just want to sit and have a coffee and look at the birds. So it started with that, and also about a third of the way into the book, I woke up one morning with this voice completely formed in my head, and it was this ghost Wanda, and she was quite one of these people who really, they're going to say what they mean, and they don't care who it affects. You know, they're going to say it pretty bluntly. But I immediately fell in love with her, and she's very funny. And so between the sisters and Wanda, you already have, you know, that situation of humor.
For me, it needs to come generally during the first draft. If it doesn't occur organically, if I try to go back and write it later to fit it in or somehow insert it or create it, it seems like I'm trying too hard for me. Now that's not to say I don't refine it or try to you know, fix it up a bit or maybe cut out some of the fluff, make it a little bit more zingy. But if it's not coming to me in the first draft, then it probably isn't meant to be there.
I would say for me it's some of both, but certainly a lot more during the first draft. I'm a pantser, and so I have kind of a vague idea of, certainly like a beginning in mind, whether it's like a character, a voice, plot idea, and then kind of a vague idea of where I want to go, and then an ending in mind. And so so for me, a lot of the humor kind of comes out in draft because I'm figuring some of these things out. And basically for me, too, like when I'm writing scenes of dialogue or talking between two characters, I'll just write out all the dialogue, and then I'll go back and fill in, like, description, and I'll fill in, action tags, things like that. And so some of the humor comes from that, like the back and forth. I figured out that basically I'm the guy that thinks of the funny line like 5 minutes like after I've had the conversation with somebody, but but in a dialogue and everything, there's just something about that it's more immediate, the way that my brain works, just goes straight down to the keyboard and everything. And so it seems like some of the humor comes there when in normal conversations, I'm thinking of the funny things 5 minutes after the conversation's ended. So
I have that same situation all the time. That's why I put that
that's
in.
That's why we're writers.
Edit. Yes, yes. Right, we edit.
For me, I'm too lazy to edit, so it's always during the draft.
Both. I go from the situation in my outline, and I try to come up with a lot of funny things right from the get-go, because humor really does break things up. It's one of those nice beats. Like, you want to have some silence in a book. You want to have some shouting in a book. But you want to have that humor that, ties everything together. And then one of the tricks I do when I have to go back and put it in an edit, anybody use Photoshop or know anything about forgery? Mm-hmm. The trick to Photoshop, so it doesn't come out like you're looking at a cardboard cutout that you're stuck there, so you got your arm around somebody famous, is you blur the edges. And you sometimes have to do the same thing with your writing. So if you rewrite a little bit above the joke and a little bit below the joke when you got to insert it, then it can feel a lot more organic. Mm-hmm. So like with you saying that sometimes it's 5 minutes after, I'll reread my dialogue and be like, oh, that's the zinger. Mm-hmm. And it might be on the seventh time. But that's the coolest thing is we're like time travelers, We got 80, we have as many chances as we need to get the joke right, and we can keep trying it out. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, Lori, how do you keep your comedic voice from sounding one note between characters or single title novels?
Okay, so for me, that's a tough one because I think I have, or at least I've been told, a somewhat snarky sense of humor. And so you really don't want to do that. And I've also read that people don't like it. So I try and tone it down. But I would say that if you're writing a novel and you are, you know, deliberately writing something funny, that you have to come at it from more than one angle. So maybe there's going to be a very funny bit of dialogue. And maybe that dialogue is going to often happen between two characters who are perhaps foils between each other. But that can't be the only way that you approach it. And so then you might set up a situation. And the situation itself is inherently funny, but you're not beating your reader over the head with it. And they just get it from that. And I would say the third way is definitely in terms of figurative language, like, you know, metaphors and similes, make an uncommon comparison. Mm-hmm. And I think that often elicits quite a bit of humor. I mean, I would say the first sentence of my book, it's just, you know, well, you know, it's between English teachers and psychopaths. What else, you know, isn't that a natural combination right there? And I would say those three things keep it from being too... hitting just a singular note.
Okay. How about you, Lynn?
I go back, you know, to that characterization and building the character and really knowing the character and making sure that the voice is authentic. And if it is authentic, then I'm not going to have that one-note problem. And if somebody does read it in a critique group and they say, well, you know, I'm confusing Mavis's voice with Helen's voice, I'm in trouble. I got to go back and fix it right then.
I have my protagonist in my series. She is, I wouldn't say based on, but very similar to me. So that's pretty easy. What would I do here? What would I say here? So that one's the easy one. I have a coworker of my protagonist, and she's always grading the protagonist kind of in a wrong way. And a lot of her humor comes out in a physical sense. She has these two unruly dogs. So whenever someone goes to her house, the dogs are knocking people down or they're jumping up and they're destroying things. She is, in my current work in progress, the seventh book in the series, Della is her name. Della has a new boyfriend, and he's kind of a unofficial art collector. Well, he loves her so much, he's putting up with these unruly dogs in his house with all of these collectibles. And so that makes for a different type of voice of humor, in that it's physical. I have another character in my book, and I've actually kind of based her off of my Aunt Darlene, who is one of the most, or what, she passed away a couple years ago, but was one of the most sarcastic, cynical, kind of mean people I ever knew. If you ever watched the show Mike and Molly, do you remember Mike's mom? How mean and kind of just she was. Yeah, so but in a funny way. It's funny because we don't have to be around her. So that's kind of the type of humor that I use for another one. So try to keep everybody a bit distinct so that it's easy enough to tell who it is that we're dealing with at the time.
I'm not sure if this directly answers the question, but we'll go with this. But one thing I've had to work on in my novels is kind of turning down the sarcasm. Mm-hmm. I can be very sarcastic, and so I've had to kind of work on scaling that back a little bit. I like to challenge myself as a writer, so I try to write different types of humor. Like, there's a lot of humor that can be found in the extremes, and so I have some fun with that, and then trying to do like dark humor and some different things like that. So exploring like different types of humor in my novel and trying to kind of challenge myself that way and challenge my characters, I guess.
Excellent. How about you, Rhonda?
Okay. To keep it from being one note, I find that sometimes situations of discovery can be really funny. In my Cook to Death 3, my story is called Steamed, and it's a young white woman who's about 20 years old, and she discovers collard greens for the first time during a potluck. And a lot of African American food is there. And she said, and then she goes on to say, I also discovered that they make you fart louder than a firecracker and stink worse than a goat. So she's, you know, it's a discovery about this new food, and that can be pretty funny.
I try to get into the characters' heads and imagine what they're going through. Like, I sometimes give the characters a particular trait. Like, I have one character in a book, and she's always using movie references. And then you want to turn it on its head, and her movie references are wrong. So she looks at Kate, and she tries to say, you know, to quote my favorite Disney princess, don't forget the importance of body language. And Kate's like, it's not a Disney princess. That's Ursula, the sea witch. And then, getting back in Kate's head, Kate's a mom of a four-year-old. What would her response be? She's like, no. I've seen The Little Mermaid. It's Ava's favorite movie. I've watched it 173 times. You know, and if you put yourself in the head and you just, you have fun with it and play with it. But it's helpful if you start with, not everybody tells a good joke. And you give them a little tick on it, on what their sense of humor, how do they tell jokes. Everybody knows people that tell bad jokes, you know, and then you can make the bad joke funny because you let it fall flat. You're like, oh, that joke stunk. And that in itself is funny, and you see it all the time.
All right. How do you write humor with a unique twist and also keep it from being jaded?
I use the first person in my writing.
I
use the first person in my writing, and so I write from a first person point of view, and but I have a different series of different characters, so because I'm in a singular person's head and a singular person's point of view, maybe I'm not the right person to ask this question after.
No, I think you are.
I would say that the world is infinitely interesting, and to get inside a person's head and see the different things that happen, the ridiculous, the serious, and the tragic, I actually think it would be hard to be jaded coming from that person's point of view, because then you are seeing the world, I mean, in every book, really, it doesn't really matter about the point of view, you're just getting kind of a unique vision, and then you're seeing everything about humor is you're seeing the things that you see every single day, but from a different standpoint, so that things that happen that are frustrating and aggravating, you miss the train and all of that, like, there's nothing more ordinary than that, but from your character's point of view, it does become humorous, or it has pathos, or it has, you know, a resonance, it connects to some deeper theme in your novel, and mm-hmm. So I would say yes, that would be how I would approach it. If you find the world interesting, your characters will too.
Mm-hmm. I also write in first person. To me, it makes sense for the type of books I write, especially the psychological horror, because, I'm sorry, you have to have a little bit of humor in the crazy as well. So, and what they think are funny may not necessarily be so, because there's a lot of tragedy to lay the groundwork for the levity. So when you have a situation where somebody's just lost their spouse or their loved one, and they're trying to get through the stages of depression, and something that they remembered from a situation that had happened between them sparks some humor. That humor, that levity is going to be so much brighter. But the rest of the piece can be very jaded, very tilted. And so, and in that sense, you can take advantage of that deeper, more off-tilt side of a story to bring a higher point of levity to a story or to your character.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was the fact that since I come from the background that I do, I probably am twisted and jaded. So anything that makes me laugh, you know, is welcomed. And so when I think about my characters and why I created those characters, I think it was because I wanted to show, you know, to be able to show the sweetness of life and the loyalty in life. And the heroes in life, you know, that come in and out of your life that maybe you're not paying attention and you don't really know. And I think that comedy has that underlying base of something that is sad or is tragic or traumatic. But somebody has been able to look at it in a little bit of a different way. And it's no longer so hard to deal with. And a good comedian will do that all the time. They'll take it and they'll flip it. And you go, oh, okay, well, I can laugh at that, even though, you know, it's really a difficult situation. So the character, especially Wanda, is one of those people who can see that. She can always see that flip side. And I fell in love with her immediately because she can see that even though those people in the church are gossipy, they also bring the chicken over when somebody in your family dies. And they, you know, so there's just something about that sweetness and about how people can be there for you. And that's why I did.
Well, I'm twisted and jaded too.
Okay.
Yeah. My first thought was, what's wrong with being jaded? I come from a bit of a law enforcement background. I was a federal probation officer for a number of years, and then I was a federal investigator with the public defender's office as well before I went into teaching. And there's that gallows humor. You're dealing with, you know, rape and murder and torture and all the horrible aspects. You know, it's one thing to read a book and you can shut a book and turn it off. When you're working in that, it's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. So you develop that kind of sixth sense of humor that you're careful to use only around your coworkers, your buddies that they get it, because otherwise people don't want to be around you. And in using that, you know, you have to be careful. You like I said, you kind of have to choose your audience. And maybe in writing a book, I would probably use very little of that. Or when I would put something in there, it would be a conversation between maybe two cops, two investigators, something like that, where they're using some of the darker humor. Because, you can't have everybody using that. And pulling a book off, I don't think, in my opinion. And, you know, as far as the humor, we've all heard it that, you know, the funniest comedians are usually the most damaged people. The funnier you are, the more damaged you are, typically. So I think we're all probably looking to try to put a little bit of a happy twist on that in a bit.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Robert?
Sure. I would say for me, it all starts with character. My hard-boiled PI is going to look at the world much differently than my female amateur sleuth, who's a forensic accountant. And so it's kind of looking at the world through their eyes and everything. And so hopefully that makes them a little bit unique. And then certainly, like a couple other people have already mentioned, I like to think I'm probably a little bit jaded and twisted and everything. And so so I think that kind of informs or enhances the writing. So.
Go ahead, Rhonda.
Well, all these twisted and jaded people. And I'm a sweetheart. So with the unique twist, I think it helps to be Irish. And mostly to get the unique twist, and it's like, I'm really lazy. I'm a Taurus. So anyway, I think it helps just to base so much humor on true stories. I use mostly true stories because I have no imagination in my short stories. There will be, I always say everything's true, but the murder and the crime. And that's, the true stuff is the most hilarious, I think.
I think keep in mind, you got all day. You have days that you could write the joke. You could stop, come back, and you can work on it. I mean, how many people pick up, like, actual books on how to write humor? My son wants to be a comedian. He's only 16. He takes notes. He tries a joke out on one friend and then goes, it didn't work quite right. And then he tries it out on another friend. And then I steal it and I put it in my book. And there's all different types of humor. Like, there's even prop humor. Like, mm-hmm. Joe coming in the back with a Fiesta headband on, Joe Conrath. Everybody turn around. There's not a it is Anna. Look at Joe. He's stalking me. I brought you an omelet this morning, and that's the payback I got.
You know, Chris, this comes from a place of deep pain.
You want to talk Jaded and Twisted. It's the man there. But you got to keep it funny. And it also, remember, you can always go like this when you're writing, asterisk, 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 joke. And then keep moving. And then when you're in a funny mood, come back and put it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. All right. How does humor change when writing for different cultures?
Okay, I think a lot of that would have to do with language. And from here, I'm speaking from personal experience. At least in my genre, which is sort of cozy at the moment, so I had sent the proofs to my editor, and she was very upset at some of the so upset at the language in one scene that I could feel it from the page. I mean, she couldn't repeat the word. I'm like, you've never said that word. But she was actually offended by it. Genuinely offended by it. And so I had to come to a different understanding of where she was coming from and where some of my potential audience might have been coming from, because to me, I thought that was fun. It wasn't even the main character. It was her other person who isn't nice at all. And I wasn't emotionally attached to the language at all. It wasn't like, you know, this was a... an artistic decision and all, but I think that was one of the ways in which I really began to consider, I think when we write, we're just writing, and then at the end process, you understand, well, how is the reader perceiving this? And I think that's where our editors really help us out. They let us know, I know this is where you were going. This is how it came across to me and how other people in your audience will see it. For her, it was startling. But startling, in other words, in the context of what your reader's expectations are. So if I were writing a different book, then that language thing wouldn't have been an issue. So, yeah.
Did you end up cutting it?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't emotionally attached to the word.
What was the word?
It was only shit. It wasn't even like fuck. And I'm
so offended by this.
It was
that was funny.
I wasn't going for shock value.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think it was shocking. The character who said it said, oh, you know, well, I was such a little shit when I was younger. And I could feel it just coming, you can't do this. And I just said to myself, that different sensibility is someone coming from a different place from where I am. How do I make sure that wherever my readers are, that they're getting it the way I am meaning it? And definitely that can be very culturally oriented. I mean, you can't write all things for all people. Mm-hmm. But I would say that's my best personal example of understanding about writing for different audiences or different people or different perceptions.
How about you, Lynn?
Well, I come from a blue-collar background, so I don't have, and the people that are in Another Kind of Hero are from that background. So there wasn't that problem writing that book. I am in the middle of writing a book about Roma people, and I sent it off to a developmental editor, and one of the characters that I really like a lot is a guy named Roman, and he's Russian, and I thought I had the accent down, because there is this difference between being funny or making fun of. And so this is one of the things that I'm going to have to go back and look at, is to make sure that isn't what is occurring, that this is how he would speak, and because I certainly meant it in a very respectful way, because I think this character has a lot of gumption. And so he's very protective of the main protagonist, who is a female. So anyway, so again, just this thing of you don't want to make fun. You want to be sure that you are capturing. And the only way I know to do that is to probably talk to and actually investigate the Roman culture more thoroughly.
A few years ago, I was doing the eHarmony online dating thing. And I would always talk to one of my best friends on the phone. She lived a couple states away. And I would always talk to her on the phone and tell her about the guy that I was going to be meeting and what I was excited about, you know, about him and all of that. And, you know, and then we'd kind of jokingly end the conversation. Oh, well, I hope he doesn't, you know, kill you. Ha, ha, ha. And I would, and one time I had commented, yeah, I hope I don't, you know, find myself chained to the water heater in his basement. And so I just thought that was something kind of chucklesome to put in my book. So I sent it out to my beta readers, and one of them just crucified me with it. She said, that stuck with me for two more chapters. I couldn't get that out of my head. That's horrible. Take that out. It's not funny. And I, you know, and she's actually a friend of mine, and later on after, you know, I did take it out. After later on, I had talked to her about it, and I said, why did you have such a visceral reaction to that? And she said, well, don't you remember that was the same time when that man in, I can't remember, Ohio, Illinois, they found all those women in his house, and some of them were chained up downstairs. And she said, that's all I could think about. You know, so, I mean, but there, I did take it out. Like, Lynn, is it? Mm-hmm. Lynn? Or,
Lori.
Lori, I'm sorry, Lori. Like Lori said, I didn't have, you know, an emotional attachment to that. I just thought it was something that, you know, to throw in and, you know, a couple chuckles. And she didn't see it that way at all. And I thought, well, if she, you know, if that's her opinion, there are probably other people too. But of course, then you run into the problem of things that are timely. You know, you put something in your book today and it's, you know, like, you might read something that was written a few years ago, you know, lauding Lance Armstrong, you know, and now today he's obviously in disfavor. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it kind of cycles around, so you never really know. But, you know, it was something, like I said, I wasn't tied to it. It wasn't central to the story. It was just kind of a one-off comment. But it's something I never would have thought of had my beta reader not pointed it out to me and said, This has basically kind of wrecked the whole first part of the book for me because I can't get it out of my head.
We have to bring up puns because you just said Lance Armstrong. It kind of cycles around. And I'm like, that was good. That was really good. And you didn't get a laugh, and I thought that was brilliant.
I didn't realize I did it.
How about you, Robert?
Sure. So I'm going to take this question in a little bit different direction. Unlike some of you, I haven't traveled internationally and some of those kind of things. And certainly, you know, the editor has you know, made comments and everything about me taking things out, and so I've, you know, followed that. But I guess one thing that I would kind of add that's kind of helped my writing, I think, is traveling and moving around. So I've lived in five different states, and soon it'll be six, and so I've gotten to live in different parts of the U.S., and so the Northeast is much different, you know, culturally than, like, the South, which is much different than, like, the Southwest, which now I'm in California, and so I've gotten to incorporate some of the West, and so just kind of some of those different environments, and so I'm going to explore some of those with some of my stories, and so it's kind of fun for me, so.
Yeah, there's definitely different cultural differences between all of those areas. Wait till you go to Colorado. You'll love it. Too much so cool.
Cultural differences. I don't know if any of you noticed, but my husband, Father Basil, dresses a little bit differently than most people. He's a Russian Orthodox deacon. So for the past 30 years, I've been exposed to crazy Russians. The setting of the story in my first book was, well, it was called, the story was Festival of Nationalities, because I didn't want to be bothered to get permission to use Festival of Nations. So with the story taking place around the Russian booth, the story wrote itself. There was actually almost a fist fight about taking down an icon of Saint Vladimir because they didn't think he was Russian, he was Ukrainian. So security was called over an icon. Then part of the story. If you're going to write about a culture and you have a story about food, naturally you have something involving borscht. I was able to put a wrestler who was mad about the taking down of the icon, and he plunged somebody's arm in the borscht, flipped him over because he's a wrestler, and lands in a on a family's table, and all the cheese curds splatter. So you have to get all the cultures involved, and the story actually starts with naming all the different booths and all the different nationalities and the inner conflicts between them and who you don't sit next to or put next to each other and how you have to try the baklava at every one because everybody makes it different. So the humor comes with the nationality, it's so easy at a Festival of Nations. The other thing about the nationality, now this I didn't write yet, but we took the train a lot, and you also see a lot of Amish people on a train, and you get long layovers at the train station, and I just saw the strangest thing I think I almost ever saw. I see both women are on their phones. I see one who's Amish, one who's a Muslim woman in a burqa. They're both looking at each other like they're from Mars, and they're kind of it's like they're talking to somebody and, you know, just saying what, you know, describing this person that they're seeing. And of course I'm hysterical. So that's my experience with the nationality.
Were they both using cell phones?
I think, maybe just the Muslim ones.
That's pretty strange.
What I actually try to do, the internet's a fascinating tool, but actual reality is so much better. And I can't tell you how many conversations I have that begin, I do not mean to offend you, but I'm a writer and I wanted to ask you a question. And you pry, and you ask questions about it. And you can ask things that people might find, you know. Hey, how do you experience this? You know, I'm not Russian, so I've got a question for you. And people are happy to tell you. They're happy to tell you about their backgrounds, their histories. They'll share with you very private things that actually blow me away. And then you can bring that in. And so if you're writing about somebody just with whatever trait, go out and ask them. I'm doing a new series with a prosthetic, a man with a prosthetic leg. I saw a guy with a prosthetic leg. I'm like, can I ask you a question? And he ended up taking his leg off. He went through it. And I'm like, wow, we had the nicest conversation. And I explained what I was trying to do. And I said, well, I want people to, you know what it's like. And the other part of it, it's called Finn and Annie, if you want to make a plug for my blog. You can sign up and get the first. It's a 4,000-word story about a guy with a prosthetic leg who's an insurance investigator. And he meets this girl named Annie, and she's deaf. So now I get to reach out to the deaf community, and I can talk to them, and I can say, well, what are some of the things? And you want to get you out of your comfort zone. You know, and two, it gives you the empathy. And three, people love to learn different things. So a lot of people don't know about, you know, people that have, you know, physical challenges, or they're going to learn from somebody from another culture, you know. So that's what I do.
Yep, that's excellent. I own a bed and breakfast, and we get people from all over the world. And it's always interesting to find their takes on many different subjects, different foods, how they perceive our government, don't ask. And it's not good. And you really get to know people.
For instance, we had a couple who got engaged while they were there, and they got to like us so much, they told us before they told their mom. So it was like, wow, did you tell your parents? No. I'm like, call your mom. Yeah. So it is. It's really interesting when you can really latch on to somebody and get to know them and hear about, you know, how they live and the way they live and how we are perceived. And they want to know how they're perceived, too, which is kind of strange to do. But,
2 minutes left.
Okay. When the funny situations or comments go silent, how do you engage comedy back into your writing?
Yeah, I would say don't worry about it. We're writers. We're not stand-up comedians. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, you shouldn't put that kind of pressure on yourself. You know you're writing something amusing, but your readers are, you're not in a comedy club. If you don't get a laugh every 10 minutes, it's not as if people are going to be disappointed. I would say let your humor build. Sometimes it's going to take the fourth iteration of her sister speaking French, and it becomes funnier kind of in each time or in each different situation. If you're really feeling as if something has gone flat in your humorous work, it might be, again, for me, it always comes back to the language. That if I go back to the language and I think about what are the comparisons, in other words, what is, you know, how am I phrasing? Because really, humor isn't how you're phrasing it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people expect to have a laugh on every single page. And I think that in varying the tone, that the humor becomes, I'd rather see it punctuated than anything else. I think you get more of an involvement on the part of your reader. They're willing to wait. Mm-hmm. But, so, yeah. I would say, don't worry. Just go with your narrative. It will, you know, your sensibility will allow the humor to emerge, I think, when it's appropriate. And I have worried about that.
I think as writers, everybody worries.
Everybody does. And I guess that's why, you know, just in terms of advice, I realized later, don't have to worry about that, actually. Mm-hmm. We're probably going to be okay with it. Yeah.
I'll just work on a different scene, because not everything has to have humor.
Yeah.
And then when I go back, I have maybe a little more levity to be able to handle a situation, or put something snarky in, which tends to be my character. And the problem with that is maybe too much snark, so... I kind of draw my line on how much snark I put in the beginning and then go back and work on that. But, in fact, that may be what I end up doing. Exactly. So when my funny scenes seem to go silent, I'll go back and do edits and put my snark in further back in the story, and then things start to pick up. So.
Well, my creative process, I do write... I write a scene, then I go back and I edit the next day and I write another scene. And I really don't worry so much, I don't worry so much about it because I know that I can go back again and again and again. I may know that there's something missing in this scene or something's not quite right. And I keep a log of that. I'll go back and I'll say, you know, you need to look this up. This is not funny. Whatever it is in that scene that is not quite right. And so I don't expect that as I'm writing the draft, it's going to be perfect. I want the main, crux to be there, and I would want the humor to be consistent, you know, as far as the character itself, that, you know, themselves. But I wouldn't get too caught up in it because I have this creative process that I know I can rely on.
Yeah, I agree. You can always fix, right?
Yeah.
You can always fix. You can always modify. You can always change, add, subtract, delete. That's the great thing about writing. But yeah, I don't think you can force it. You know, if it's not funny, it's not funny. If it's falling flat, it's falling flat. And you know, I think we've all read books where people try to be too funny or too jokey.
Yeah.
And it just, it kind of hurts to read it because it feels like they're trying too hard, I think, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I, again, kind of agreeing with the rest of the panel so far, don't force it.
All right. On the other half here, can there be too much humor in your writing, and where do you draw the line?
I would agree, that you can't have too much humor, that you can have too many jokes that that people are going to miss, too many zingers and stuff like that, and it kind of looks like you're trying too hard, and sometimes you may have to scale back a little bit, and actually then the jokes that are left will kind of pop out and stand mm-hmm. out and things mm-hmm. like that. So so that's something that I've actually had to learn a little bit with my writing, that I probably screwed that up a little bit in the beginning too, was trying to make it too funny at times and everything. So learning that you can scale back and actually becomes funnier. So.
Well, I think that I don't think there can be too much humor, because I think you can manifest humor in different ways. It can be, one could be a chuckle, one can just be hysterical. I like when I read. Somebody's having a conversation with somebody. Like during an interview or just somebody they can't stand, and then there's a back of their mind, what they're saying and what they're thinking about the person, and it can usually be an insult or what they're really thinking about the person. So that can be really funny, I think. Introducing a new character when you're bringing up, just any kind of humor. In one example, when I did a screenplay, it was just a description. When you're bringing into a new character or a new situation, I said something like, Percy is well-groomed, and while Sonny looks like an unmade bed. So, it can be the little, the subtle humor and hysterical humor. So we're not thinking in terms of always having to be hysterical, but I think people like the little jab that, I can laugh at this, but not everybody might get this, but I get it.
Okay, Chris, you have something on this?
How do you unblock the humor? Lots of this. No. I'm jumping back to five. But in all seriousness, we're writers. We tap into pain and fear and conflict. We get sucked toward the void. Everybody here is jaded. So if you all of a sudden you're like, I am not coming up with a joke, you need to take a walk. You need to go away. You need to laugh. Because we get the best jobs in the world. So it should, humor can come, but as everybody said, you can always go back to it. And I just wanted to give a tip, because yeah, you can have too much. I haven't experienced the too much. But one of the things that I really like to do, if anybody knows Bruce Lee, one of his best things for a punch is he went like this. This is all he did. He shot up his back end, and people would look at it like, look at the birdie, and then he'd punch you in the face. So he'd go, hey, bang. So what I do is I put a joke, and then if you're reading one of my books and you see a joke, I'm hiding something. And you can get a little joke right in there, and you can pepper it in. So, mm-hmm. But there can definitely be too much humor. Don't force it. But it should come naturally because you're so happy because you're a writer.
Such a happy profession. Questions? Yes?
I saw a question, just a comment. You were talking about culture and people not living in the United States. Mm-hmm. When my husband and I were stationed in Europe, we went to see some of my family, my German family in Aachen. And my cousin said, oh yeah, we'll fly to the United States and then we'll drive to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's just that we would just be, just a few hours away. Because they travel through countries over there the way we go through states.
Okay, we have time.
They don't understand the vast distance of our country.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're absolutely right. One more question.
This is more of a comment. I don't think you can think about jaded humor without thinking about it. I'm having a senior moment not being able to think of the actress, but she was Maude, and she also was one of the Golden Girls.
B. Arthur.
Yes, yes. But, she was in, they were at a funeral home and their friend had died and there was music playing and the funeral director says, you know, we love to have music that they, that the person enjoyed, you know. And Maude just looks at her and she goes, the girl from Ipanema? It's like, you know, it just stopped. Uh-huh. It just, you know, broke their moment, but it just stopped. The girl from Ipanema in the funeral home. So.
But yeah, that's all you have to do is just put in something that changes the perspective for a second to throw them a little bit off balance, give them something to think about, or just make them laugh. And that's my laugh out loud writing humor. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. 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 Thanks.